The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello, thanks for joining me for another Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, founder of the charity Yes to Life, working to make integrative medicine available to people with cancer in the UK. A couple of weeks ago, I was lucky enough to visit an initiative to help families with children who have cancer. It's located in surroundings that are breathtakingly beautiful, and it's in a daringly creative building. The money to make this all possible has been raised by Lynn McNichol through the charity she set up with her husband Ian, It's Good to Give. Lynn kindly agreed to talk to us today from Edinburgh to tell us about the Ripple Retreat and its purpose. Hi Lynn, thanks a lot for coming on the Yes to Life show today.
My absolute pleasure.
So you're the founder and the chair of It's Good to Give, fantastic name for a charity, by the way. But you came to the world of fundraising and charity quite well into your midlife, I believe. A big change of direction. What prompted it?
It was really gratitude. I was just at my 49th birthday and trying to plan what I could do for my 50th birthday, and decided that I would fundraise. And I said I would raise £5,000 between 49 and 50 for a charity. And my husband said, I could do better than that. And he said, why don't you make it £1,000 for each year of your life?
Wow, right.
And so my £50,000 challenge was born. So I started that around my 49th birthday. And that was really how it all started. It started quite simply to begin with. I had an event in the house, just invited people along for home baking, soups. I had a couple of ladies doing mini manicures. And it was a very long day because I hadn't learned that how tiring events could be. And we did it from something like 10 in the morning till 8 at night.
Wow.
But we did raise £1,100, and I think that was a nice spur for me.
Right.
And then it just kind of snowballed after that, and it turned out quite quickly that, you know, this was something I should have been doing a long time before because I absolutely loved it. But I didn't know. I chose a charity simply because they were not at all known in the east of Scotland, and not very well known in Scotland or the UK, mm-hmm. but certainly not in the east. And I knew that as well as raising money, I could help raise awareness.
Yes.
And so that seemed like a bonus. And but it was for teenage cancer. Mm-hmm. And so I hadn't met any young people with cancer. But in the August, all that changed, and I met two young people, Ross and Zoe, who had both had treatment for cancer, and Zoe was still going through treatment. And that was really when my life changed, because I listened to them. And that was the start of me listening to them and others like them and their families. And that was it.
Yeah.
I was on a path that was different to the one I had thought I was going to do.
Yeah, well, it seems like it was a natural fit for you, and obviously you've been really impacted by meeting these people who, let's face it, most people don't get to meet families and children with cancer. You know, it's an adult thing generally. These days, all too many of us know an adult who's had cancer, but there's very particular things to do with children and families which need to be addressed, which I'm sure we're going to talk about a lot more as we get on with the interview. So the focus for It's Good to Give has been on children, on younger people, and on families who've been affected by cancer. So you had quite a string of achievements under your belt before getting to what we would call your most spectacular achievement, which we'll be talking about in a minute. Could you tell us a bit yep. about some of those?
Well, I've had this fundraise for Teenage Cancer Trust for years as a full-time volunteer. And probably the very first wonderful achievement was having enough money and opening the first unit in the east of Scotland at the Royal Hospital for Sick Children. And they let me cut the ribbon that day with a lot of the young people beside me. Wow. And it was special because until that moment, teenagers had been in the main ward with little children, and it just was wrong.
Yeah.
And so this was a huge achievement, and I know that it, obviously from meeting so many families since then, what a difference it has made to their time in hospital. So that was probably the first one. And just at the same time, I was given the award of Volunteer Fundraiser of the Year for Scotland. And that was a pretty special day, so that was nice. And then we set up It's Good to Give, and you're right about the name. It was called that because for me it had been good to give my time, my skills, my ideas,
right.
put them together wisely and make the money. And that's really what we draw on from others who contribute to the charity. And since then, yes, all the things we do from the practical day-to-day support, we know how much of a difference that can make. And I've got to know so many other families. And yes, in 2015, I was very nicely given an OBE.
Yes. Well, sounds like you deserved it. Amazing things you've achieved. Fantastic. And it's amazing also to realise how the act of doing stuff for others can be so utterly rewarding, isn't it? It's just like it's not immediately obvious to people who are struggling to get by in life and feeling like they haven't got enough of everything, but it's very much the case, isn't it, that going in the opposite direction is the best.
Absolutely. The last of that, I've been doing this volunteer fundraising for 12 years, and my circle of friends, and I mean friends, has grown, I mean, in a crazy way. And also just even acquaintances, people that you might call sort of friends, but in the loosest sense of the word, I have got hundreds of people that I now know, you know, that you pass in the street, you can chat to, who I've encouraged to fundraise. And people who have said to me that because of what I started, they've made new friends. Mm. And it is that act of volunteering brings you into a whole new circle of like-minded people, and you do get so much from being able to help others. Mm. You just do. Simple as.
Yeah, great. So a couple of weeks ago, I was lucky enough to visit your baby, as I would call it, the Ripple Retreat, set in the most glorious and secluded spot in the Highlands of Scotland. So firstly, when and how was this concept hatched?
Well, that really was 8 years ago, just as Ian and I were planning to start a charity. We knew we wanted to provide practical support, because there are lots of wonderful treat charities out there for youngsters. Sort of take them on their holidays, or they'll take them to concerts or whatever. And I knew that what I wanted to do was to fill the gaps. So we provide the snacks into the ward, but that's for the parents as well, because they don't get fed when they're in hospital with their children. So I wanted to do anything that was practical. And at the same time, in our heads, I had seen so many families who were split up during treatment because one parent's in hospital with the child and the other parent is out at work keeping a roof over their heads. Siblings, if there were any, were often with granny, grandpa, or other relatives. So So I wanted to do something that brought that family back together, even if it was just for a short time. And I knew that we wanted to create a retreat. So the idea started in 2009, really. Mm-hmm. Set up the charity in 2010. And then from that minute on, it was a case of getting in enough money to be able to purchase land, because I believed we were going to have to purchase land. Mm-hmm. So the first 3 years were very much focused on raising the money to buy the land. And then at that point, when we had enough money, we put out feelers, we went to see lots of sites, and as it happened, cutting a very long story short, we were introduced to David and Jane Ferguson. And David said to us, I've got land and I want to give it to a charity, so come and see me. And so we went up to Loch Venachar and we met David and a local councillor that he'd invited along as well to share his idea. And they both quizzed us at length about the charity and about our ambitions and how we'd act. And David said, OK, I want to give you the land if you want it. It's yours.
Amazing.
And unbelievable. We went to the planners, and that was the actual, it's in a national park. It's in the Loch Lomond and Trossachs National Park. Mm. So they are the planning authority.
Right.
And so we went to the planners and we told them what had happened. And we had a meeting with them and they said, we don't normally allow this, but we do like what your charity is about. And they were trying to promote, they do promote the park as a place of peace.
Yes.
And well-being. So this worked well for them too. And they said, but we don't want anything conventional. This building must be exceptional.
Right.
And so at that point, you know, we knew we were going to have to go with something a little bit different.
Yeah.
I don't think in our heads we ever had in our, you know, what we thought we were wanting. I don't think we thought conventional, but we certainly didn't think and what we have, that wasn't in our heads at all.
Well,
I was introduced to architect Tony Kettle, and he had designed the Falkirk Wheel, which is a pretty iconic construction in Scotland. And he said, yes, I'm interested. He was working a lot in the Middle East, so we had to wait a wee while because he was travelling back and forth. And then one day he came to us and he showed us a sketch that he'd done, and it was of the retreat as you see it now, and we haven't changed it at all, and neither did the planners. They absolutely loved it because it sits well in its surroundings and it is exceptional.
Well, I agree with both of those for sure. Well, and it's certainly not conventional. Look, we're on radio here, but can you do your best to paint a picture of the Ripple Retreat, how it looks in its setting? Just do your best to tell people what you've got there.
Okay. Well, we've got 2 acres of land on the shores of a loch. Now, this loch is 3 miles long and I don't know how wide, but let's say it's half a mile wide. The view is right across the loch over to Ben Leddy. Ben Leddy is actually just a hill. It's not a Munro, and it's not even a Corbett, which is the hill below a Munro, but it's a very pretty looking hill.
Mm-hmm.
Further up the loch, if we look up the length of the loch, we can see Ben Venu, which is a Munro, and certainly in the last week these have been snow capped, which is really very pretty. So we're sitting on this 2 acres of, I suppose, grassy lands. And we've got forest behind us, lots and lots of thousands of trees just behind us. And the retreat is set facing east. It's made, it's got a rippled roof, which is to reflect the ripples of the loch. And it's got a balcony that extends beyond the rippled roof. And that's a cantilevered balcony, which was a challenge in itself to build. And the roof is made of coated zinc. And the coating is a kind of bluey-green colour, again, to reflect the water and the forest behind. So it does really blend in nicely, but it's certainly not hidden because of its interesting design. There is a lot of glass. It's almost entirely glass. There are some walls on one side of the building which are for bedrooms, but otherwise the building is just all glass on the outside. Inside we've got three bedrooms which all have en suites, and then we have a huge main area which is comprised of kitchen, dining, living, and then we've got a little area up, well, it's a big area beyond that, which is we've split into two. We've made a reading corner, and then the other side is there's a music corner and a play area. We've got a beautiful, and the ceilings are very high in the main area, and we've got a beautiful fireplace, which is a log burning fire, and the fireplace is in slate. Inside we've got some fun things as well, because we've got a lovely garden. We've got a swing which is suitable for children of all abilities, even those in a wheelchair. We've got musical stepping stones and a flying fox, because children, when they're going through treatment, can't go to parks because of their the danger to their immune system. So we wanted to bring the park to them in a safe setting, and so the flying fox is hugely popular, and that's with adults and children. I know, I've been on it lots.
Yeah, well, look, it's very amazing place. I mean, you feel like you're in some kind of movie or something just being there at all. It's so unusual, and as you say, it's such a futuristic design in a way. Very impressive. I really encourage listeners to stick Ripple Retreat into their browser and just take a look at some of the pictures, because it's stunning. I came back with a camera full of amazing pictures myself. So look, the unusual features of it, just as a building, could you tell us, you know, that both from the point of view of how it works and also from the point of view of the people who are staying there?
Well, other things I had not mentioned yet are the things like we've got incredible partnerships with businesses in Scotland, for example with a local blacksmith who has just become a friend of the charity, and he has created an entrance gate, so you come down a reasonably steep driveway into the estate, if you like, of the Ripple Retreat, and there's this beautiful gate. And he's made this gate as appealing as he can to children, and it's got on it a blackbird, it's got a bee, it's got a butterfly, it's got a beautiful thistle, it's got a shooting star. There's all sorts of things on this gate, and we've got lots of photographs of the gate on our website, so it is worth a look. And he's also put on the gate a spider coming down into its web, and that he put that there because of Robert the Bruce, who is one of the Scottish kings, and he had he's well known for watching a spider when he was in hiding, and the spider never gave up, and so Kevin has put this into the Ripple Retreat gate for the kids and for them to never give up, which is really sweet of him. Then you come into the driveway and you're met by another piece by Kev Paxton, the blacksmith, which is a bike rack, which is also stunning. So there's always, we're trying to make sure that there's things that are really appealing outside as well as inside, to try and encourage people to go out. Now the family can come in. Now this is a family of up to six, so it's really two adults and up to, well, three children and a baby, because we have a travel cot. And they can arrive at the retreat. They're given a code. There actually is always somebody there to greet them. So far it's been my husband and I, but we do have a team of volunteers who are willing to share that role with us this year. And so you'll be greeted, you'll be shown around the retreat, shown how things work, and you're given a code. So there's no front door key, we have a keypad, and you just put the code in, and the door opens. You know, inside there's a lot of things that we had to show them. We have Because we have the windows are all different sizes because of the curves, we don't have any curtains, so we actually have blinds. And so we have these electric with controls on the wall, so we show them how to do that. We've got fun things like in every ensuite, there's a mirror that, as well as being a demisting mirror, it also plays music through your phone.
Right.
It defeats me, but the children can do it very easily. They need to be initially shown how to do that. So it's quite a high-tech house, and so we spend quite a lot of time with the family showing them what to do, and then we walk away and leave them. But wonderfully, local businesses have contributed to their stay by providing, there's a safari park nearby, Blair Drummond Safari Park, and they give every family that stays a voucher to go and visit.
Fantastic.
We have our restaurant nearby who gives them a voucher for lunch. So there's many people that have come in and contributed to that. I have another person who this year is just starting to provide grocery shopping every week so that there are the dry goods that are needed. So we wouldn't put in anything that was fresh because I don't know what people like. But there's a stock there, a nice cupboard filled with goodies that they can use. And then we just leave them to their own devices for 5 days to have that much-needed time together.
Well, that's fantastic, and I can say from personal experience, my daughter had cancer 3 times, and first time she was very young, only 9, a second time she was a teenager, and Click, which was, you know, a separate charity at that time, not Click Sargent, provided us with a trip away, and it was just like magic in amongst the sort of hell of grinding through all this treatment and all the difficulties you've already alluded to. Amazing to be able to do that, and so I can well imagine that going to your centre there in the Highlands is just an extraordinary experience. Just coming back again to the purpose of the centre, you've already said a bit about that that I've just talked about the needs of the family, which gets so it's so divisive having cancer because you simply can't be together as a family and get through all that. So do you want to just say a bit more about it? Because I'd say most people have probably got no idea that this goes on.
So many of the families have just said to me that the fact that they can be together even for these short 5 days has made such a difference to them because of the situation. And in fact, it's one of the reasons we set up the charity was, ironically, in 2009, a friend of mine who had been helping me fundraise and who had come on an overseas trek with me, her daughter, aged 10, was diagnosed with leukemia. And they went into hospital on one day in June and they said, OK, you've got leukemia, you're staying in, we're starting treatment today. And she didn't get out for the next 6 months. She literally did not get home for a minute. And so Mum just went into hospital with her. Dad had just got a job in London. And so he was commuting from Edinburgh to London.
Wow.
Sunday night. He was able to negotiate with his new employers that he would work from home on a Friday. So he would come back on a Thursday night. He would go into hospital, let Mum go home, see to their other daughter, who by this time was staying with friends because they didn't have any other family, and they had a family dog who was somewhere else. And I watched this over the following 6 months, and I also saw it happening to other families, and I saw the effect on both the parents. I mean, the stress was incredible, apart from the terror they had over their daughter being this sick. It really had a massive effect on me. Watching this go on, and I know that if they'd been able to get away, and not till after she had finished her treatment, it would have meant a great deal to them. So yeah, it's a terrible, terrible time for them. And even those who are treated on and off, who can, you know, go into hospital for a few days and get their chemotherapy and their other treatments and then go home and be at home for a while, I've become friends with many of them as well. And the effect on their life is unbelievable because their life naturally revolves around their sick child.
Right.
And everything else has to fall into place behind that.
It does. Yes. Okay, so although naturally a huge number of people have made what you've done there possible, up to a point, the whole project's been in the hands of just two of you, you and your husband Ian. Now, Ian, apart from multiplying your challenge by 10 for you, he's obviously had quite an important part to play in the creation of the Ripple Retreat, hasn't he?
Oh, yes. Well, in the beginning, Ian was working, so his support was coming up with the suggestions like multiplying it by 10. But he was always there. He was always there, ready to listen to my ideas and to be supportive, and he would help me at events. But then when we talked about setting up our own charity, it was around the time that he was going to retire. So it was very much a joint decision, because we took it seriously. We knew that setting up a charity wasn't something we were going to do just for a couple of years.
Right.
This was our real commitment. And so we approached a solicitor, and we asked the solicitor, and we paid for it ourselves, yeah, because we wanted to get this right, to write our constitution, to do our application to OSCAR, which in Scotland is the Office of the Scottish Charity Regulator. And we wanted to get it right. We just knew that we wanted to start off on the right foot. And when we started to look for land, it has been his what he'd been doing for the previous 10, 15 years was project management. Mm. So it was an easy transition for him into managing the retreat. And he knew everything that the builders were talking about. So he took on the role of project manager. And yes, he did indeed project manage the whole role. And that became a little bit more challenging in the early days, because I myself was diagnosed with cancer in the year that we literally started to negotiate with builders. Mm. So
wow.
That then fell entirely on Ian's shoulders, as well as looking after me and worrying about me. So we got a bit of a taste of what it felt like ourselves. But
amazing. So these two things were going on in parallel. It's quite extraordinary, and you must be extremely proud of what you've managed to achieve together. I mean, it's an astonishing achievement for two people to set off and do.
Oh, I think quite a lot of people say that they couldn't work with a husband or wife 24/7, and that's never been the case for us. And we've always been able to do that kind of thing. So it was easy. I mean, of course we have our little fallouts, and we're both quite strong-minded and have our opinions, let each other know that. But they're always resolved. And yeah, when we drive down that drive to visit the retreat, we do still pinch ourselves.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, fantastic. So when we were there, you had a few stories to share about the, shall we say, uneven journey to opening the Ripple Retreat. Are there one or two you'd like to share on the radio?
Yeah. Bless the builder's heart. His original timescale was just a little bit dreamy, let's be polite. But unfortunately for him, I believed him. Ian had a bit more healthy scepticism about the timescale. So as it slipped, he would be like, well, that's because of this or because of that. I was more like, that's not what he said. Things did happen. The construction of the steel frame took a little bit longer than we anticipated, and the roof definitely did. I'll be honest, because I have little experience in that field, I would get a bit cross going up and saying, well, there's hardly anything being done in a week. And then one day we happened to go up, and the guys were working on the roof, and it changed my opinion, because there were these two guys on the roof with what looked to me like a crimping machine, and they had panels of the zinc. It had to be bent to the shape of the roof and the curve at the back, and they were sealing it with this crimping machine by hand, and it was absolutely fantastic to watch.
Yeah.
I had genuine immense respect for these two guys, this craft that they were doing.
Yes.
skill. And when you look at it, for me, one of the most beautiful bits of that building is at the back, the curve at the back. When I walk past it, I still look at it, I touch it, and I remember watching these two guys doing it. So there were those bits. I mean, even things like waiting on the glass to arrive and was it going to fit. So yes, there were many moments, but for me, and it was probably now that it's all over, quite funny to watch. But the week before, the contractor had promised me that I would be able to take, I suppose, if you like, occupation, as in that I could go in and dress the inside of it. In the middle of April, because I had managed to get Lorraine Kelly to agree to come and open it. Now, I knew that Lorraine Kelly's schedule was super busy. And so the fact that she had said she could do the 12th of May, I could not change that. And I had said to the contractor at the beginning of the year, I have made it the 12th of May, because that's quite far away. Do you promise me this is doable? Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, it was, but we probably got little sleep that week. And one of the worst moments was the fact that we had no water. And I had moved in on the Monday, Ian and I had moved in on the Monday, and we had to literally go, and our neighbours are not close by.
No.
And I had to say to them, please can we come and use your shower? And we'd literally each morning, because we had water, but it wasn't safe, it wasn't treated. And then to wash the kitchen, I had to boil pans of water that I bought. So I had bought, you know, gallon bottles of whatever it was, and that's what we had to use for washing the kitchen down. So that was an interesting week. People who came to help us, and we had very many, we had dozens and dozens of people and volunteers who came up on the Tuesday, and we opened on the Friday. Yeah. And if I showed you the pictures on the Tuesday, the inside, we were filled with boxes, and people came in, they went away, and they said to me afterwards, they thought there was no way that this house was going to be ready for the Friday. But you know what? Determination, wonderful help. These people pitched in, we worked super hard, really late into the night and certainly very early in the morning. We didn't get the water treated and told it was safe until 10 o'clock on the morning we opened, and Lorraine Kelly arrived at 1 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah, so that was definitely interesting.
Yeah, well, it's the kind of stuff you can look back and laugh about, but at the time, I imagine,
yes,
a little bit more stressful. Anyway,
I think I got a few more grey hairs that day.
Probably. Well, look, let's face it, it was never going to be a simple construction project, that one. It's so radical, and I completely appreciate what you say about the curve at the back there. It's absolutely beautiful, isn't it? It's amazing. I was looking at photos of it this morning. It's just very unusual shape. It's not just a straightforward curve at all. And it's absolutely beautifully built. It looks perfect.
Yep, it is.
Okay, so it's quite a new venture, but you've been operating it probably long enough now to know whether you're being successful in meeting your aims?
Yes, we definitely are. We have our visitor book, and I have spoken to every family that has stayed, 18 families have stayed, and I've spoken at length to them all. I asked them for absolutely honest feedback. From that feedback, we've made some small changes. And we took account of everything they have said to us. But the thing that each one of them said was, this is amazing. The ability to be together, the peace, the tranquility, the love they feel in the building, and the love that they know has gone into the building, they get from it. And yes, Jacob was 4, and he had said in the book, obviously written by mummy or daddy, can we keep this holiday forever?
Fantastic.
So, well, yeah.
That's your payback.
It is. Yes, so, it is.
It is, right. Okay, so moving back from the building to the people, the beneficiaries, the Ripple Retreat's the most tangible aspect of the work you've been doing, but it's the less tangible challenges that the children and their families face that's what you're really working with. So I want to talk a bit more about the often unnoticed and unmet needs that they have. Would you like to say what some of the most common difficulties are? You mentioned a few, but just maybe go into it a bit more and how you think these can be eased.
The one thing I'm good at is listening to family. So when they've come along to us and said things like, there are all sorts of things, even when they're going through the treatment, many families who, because often one parent gives up their job if they have, you know, if both parents work, quite often I've seen that one parent gives up their job and that puts them in a financial position that is worse off than they were before. And cancer treatments obviously are free from the NHS, but they have costs, the travel costs. And I know they can get help from charities like Click Sargent, who are fantastic, but there are lots of other costs, even the families being in hospital, mum or dad being in hospital with them. There are costs for eating that are more expensive than if they were at home. Yes. And that's why we wanted to provide things like the snacks for parents. It's not proper meal. It helps a little bit. We've had lots of families who have approached us with requests to help, for example, with repairs to the family car.
Right.
Because without the family car, they're having to rely on other support or waiting on an ambulance to take them places, or patient transport rather than an ambulance. And so we've been able to help do that kind of practical. Again, it's always been practical for us. We had a young lad who was 17. He had passed his driving test. He wanted to return to college. And cancer treatments had put him in a wheelchair because just lost the use of his legs. And he wanted to get a mobility car. But to do that, and I don't know if it's still the case, but at that time he had to pay a £1,000 deposit for the mobility car, which he couldn't afford. Yes. Another charity had offered £500, and we gave the other £500 so that he could get the use of a mobility car and be independent, because otherwise he was going to be stuck at home, and this let him go back to college. And so for us, that was a no-brainer. I'd have given them the whole £1,000 if he needed it. So, I mean, these things people don't really, I don't think, appreciate. I would never have thought of it. But it's little things like that that can make all the difference to people going through this.
So, as you say, listening is what it's all about here. Actually, these people are not really getting heard particularly, I think, and it's a very different scenario to dealing with adults with cancer, basically, I think. That's not a great scenario for anyone, but it's often with adults, for example, there are issues of carer burnout, which are not so obvious. You know, the carers can often completely and utterly stretch themselves to the limit, trying to do everything for the person with cancer. But I think the carer burnout can multiply drastically when the carer is a parent.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it's,
if you've got other children.
Well, you've got other children.
And also, even things like, we provide earning vouchers because, again, it was, I had heard a mum saying, oh, does anybody want to help me do my earning? She said it on Facebook.
Right.
And I thought, why are we not doing that? Of course she can't do an earning. She's exhausted.
Right.
She's, you know, got one child in hospital. She's got other children at school. And, you know, well, I'm no great ironer, it's not my favourite thing, so I tend to buy things that don't need ironed.
Right.
You can't always do that with kids. You've got school shirts, you've got things that do need ironed. So we said, I just said, I'll do it, I'll get it done for you. I certainly wasn't going to do it myself. Nobody would want my stuff. But we provided the ironing vouchers. We find a local business near where they live. So we say, where do you live? We find a business that's near there, that's insured. And we get them a voucher for that business, up to four vouchers, so four loads of washing can be done for them. And what a difference that makes, even just those four vouchers. It's the practical things like that. It's the fact that, you know, they've got to look after you quite often, other siblings.
Yes.
And that's a challenge for those children too, because, of course, they feel Sometimes I've seen young kids who feel a little bit resentful, is too strong a word, but the child who's sick is getting all the attention.
Absolutely.
And they're maybe too young to understand why.
Mm.
Or maybe they're a little bit older and they do understand why, and then they feel guilty for feeling like that. And it's great to be able to bring that whole family together and take them to our workshops to let them be at the retreat, and everybody's treated the same.
Mm. Well, it's great you mentioned the siblings there, because I mean, it's something that I, as a parent, didn't really even start to think about until years later, that, you know, what had the experience been of the, you know, my daughter's sisters. And it's quite an extraordinary situation when one child suddenly sucks up all the attention of both parents for an extended period, and they literally have to take a back seat. It's like, you know, their needs are secondary. And when that plays into the dynamics that already exist in between siblings, you know, where they're all struggling to get the attention, it's extraordinarily difficult. And I think it's a completely underestimated need that the siblings have to try and make
Absolutely.
Sense of all this.
Just kids, they're just young people themselves, you know.
Yes. Yeah. So
it's terrible.
So what you're offering to, you know, which is a massive treat for all the family together, is
yes.
great, because
yes.
it is divisive, this thing of the, you know, the children, the siblings might, as you pointed out, even end up being cared for by granny and grandpa or somebody completely different. So it's really
yeah.
does take families apart.
That's right, and that must be so hard to get your head around as a youngster, that, you know, why am I not even in my own house?
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so have you got some kind of top resources for families, you know, apart from your fantastic charity, but otherwise, where you would signpost families to get help and support of different kinds?
Oh, yes. I mean, we're very fortunate up here to have several charities. Quick Sergeant, as you've already mentioned, and there are other charities in Edinburgh, and certainly in Scotland. Maggie Centres have been fantastic. They run team groups, and they're great for counselling as well. So, yes, we do signpost them to other places.
Great.
I think a bit more needs to be done that maybe could be a better a booklet, I don't know, something that would literally give a family arriving in hospital a detailed list of all other resources available to support them.
Yes. Yeah.
But we have a new children's hospital coming along at some point, either later this year. They also have been beset by delays. But I'm hoping that it's at that point we get some kind of leaflet that describes what all the charities do and what all the charities can do to support, you know, whatever the illness.
Mm.
But we'll see.
Yeah, well, that would
we'll
be great. Something that was very specific to children and families would be really useful, I think. Okay, so
yeah.
A last question. Is there anything you've got your sights set on for the future? I mean, you've done a lot, you're doing a lot, but you're quite ambitious too, I've picked up. So have you got any thoughts on what you want to do?
Yeah, I do. I mean, obviously I want to keep making the retreat as good as it is, improving the grounds, because obviously we've been only in for less than a year. So there are things that we have seen that we are on the shores of a loch, so we do get quite a lot of water logging, so we quite like to work on drainage. But yes, as a project, I'd quite like to do something, I don't know quite what it is yet, to help survivors of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause these are young people who sometimes, years after the event, are still dealing with almost PTSD.
Right.
And I've met many who are struggling with that kind of thing. And obviously it comes back to the siblings as well.
Mm.
So there's something in that. I don't know quite what it is yet. I've spoken to a couple of people, so the feelers are out there. But yes, I'd really just like to continue to supporting the families in practical ways and extending how we do that.
Well, it's great to have somebody like you thinking about this stuff. It's really needed. So look, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks very much for telling us about all your work. It's completely inspirational, and you're clearly demonstrating that where there's a will, there's a way, and that amazing things really are possible. Yeah, so thanks very much indeed, Lynn.
That's okay. You're very welcome, Robin.
It's so impressive to hear a success story like that. The McNichols generated a mountain of goodwill from their determination to create something really good, and this in turn made the whole thing possible. As usual, you can find links to material related to today's show on the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Just click the Yes to Life show logo that's on the homepage. I want to tell you about the first two events in the Yes to Life calendar for this year. On Wednesday the 7th of March in Camden, Marcus Callow from the Institute of Professional Will Writers will be helping people to navigate the world of lasting powers of attorney and making a will. So if this is something you've been thinking about but not quite getting round to, then make a note of that in your diary. On Wednesday the 21st of March at the Bloomsbury Gallery in London, we have an event called Let's Talk Cannabis. With the laws for medical marijuana rapidly changing around the world, it's hard to keep up with the latest research and policies. With more and more evidence supporting the positive effects of cannabis for people with chronic illnesses like cancer, we need to start talking about it. Dr. Saoirse O'Sullivan will be making the presentation and is a leading researcher in the field of cannabinoid research, awarded the title of International Cannabinoid Research Society Young Investigator of the Year in 2016. Dr. O'Sullivan has published numerous papers on the role of cannabinoid receptors in health and disease. Joining her will be Dr. Henry Fisher, who's the policy director of Voltface, a think tank that explores public policies relating to drugs. Details of both these events are on the Yes to Life website. Just go to yestolife.org.uk and follow the links on the homepage. Thank you for listening to the show today. Hope you can join me again next week. Goodbye.